What's cracking, big dogs? Welcome back to the channel. Welcome back to the headquarters. Most importantly, welcome back to Behind the Business of Fantasy Football. My name is Nicholas. This is BDGE. This is the fourth series, the fourth season of this series. Starts today, goes all the way through the NFL draft. So we'll be putting out 9, 10, maybe 12 interviews. I'm not very good at math, so y'all can figure that out. Started the series 4 years ago. The point of the series is to bring on people within the fantasy sports industry that I think are innovative, that I think are thoughtful, that I think do things differently, do them at a very high level, very efficient, and are changing the way the space moves into the future. We don't do any player talk, okay? We're not talking rookie, we're not talking dynasty, we're not talking season long. We are talking only marketing, branding, business, revenue, social media, engagement, and innovation within the fantasy sports space. I bring on one guest each week to talk about just that. To be honest, it's easily my favorite piece of content that I make on this channel, and I hope you guys enjoy it. If you've missed any of the previous episodes, I believe this is number 27 or 28. There are a lot of content pieces prior to this, so you can go check out the playlist on the YouTube channel. I think it's called Behind the Business of Fantasy Football. So again, welcome back to the channel. Let's tuck our shirts in. Let's stop yelling, and let's welcome the first guest. So I'm joined today by someone that I consider to be a friend, somewhat of a mentor, an underrated entrepreneur, in my opinion, not only in the fantasy space, but just overall. You guys know him as a co-host of the Fantasy Footballers podcast. You know him as a co-host of the Spitballers podcast, and you know him all over the Twitter sphere. These guys are everywhere. I'm pumped to bring you back onto the show, Andy. You are the first three-time guest. I'm trying to get you to those Tom Brady numbers. You know,
I was gonna say we got a ways to go there for every
time I bring you back on, he just seems to win another championship. So it feels like we're just gonna be chasing Tom Brady for the GOAT status for a long time. But I really look forward to these conversations with you each and every year. They're super insightful for me. They're super insightful for the audience. Tons of value comes out of this, and these are some of my favorite conversations. With that, I welcome you back onto the show. How are you over there? What's going on in the studio? How's your week been? How's your off-season been since the Super Bowl ended, and what's going on, man?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for having me back on. It's always a lot of fun to chat, and it's always very engaging. You know, you spend your whole year talking about rookie picks or trades or, you know, all the questions we get, and it's fun to talk about the business behind fantasy and entrepreneurship and some of these things that I know you're very interested in and a lot of people out there are interested in, and building a brand and doing those things. So it's always really engaging and fun to talk about them. We're doing good out here. I think we're in part of us is just filled with gratitude of getting through a whole season and getting to the Super Bowl. And we're kind of in that fantasy football season come down mode a little bit. And we'll be getting into the rookie stuff. And no, we're just thankful. I mean, this past year was a year, man. It was something
the
special.
Only way this year was the weather outside is weather. This year was a year, man.
That's it. So we're thankful that we made it through, and we're just looking forward to 2021 and a little bit more normalcy. And you kind of got humbled a little bit, and you realize that you can only plan so far into the future, but we're excited about what's to come.
Yeah. So speaking of normalcy, like, I'm curious what you guys do in the off season. I know you scale back the shows a lot. You know, once summer ramps up, you guys are 5 days a week and more with the other pieces of content that you guys are putting out. I know you scale down to, I believe, 2 shows a week from now until, you know, a few months down the line. Myself, I feel like I, you know, as a full-time content creator, I almost kind of put pressure on myself to put stuff out there like every day. It doesn't necessarily have to be the fantasy show, but I feel I don't know if it's a responsibility or if it's just that, like, you know, that's what drives me each and every day. But when you guys pull back, what else do you have going on? Like, what else do you, is this for you guys? I know you've built your business around your lifestyle, right? Like, you want to make sure that you have time for your family. You want to make sure that you have time for other things to enjoy in life. Is this that part of the year where you guys have kind of been successful enough during the fantasy season and for like a 6 month stretch that you pull back and use that to focus on the family and the things that are important? Or is this more the time of the year where you focus on business things, you step back, you look at everything from, you know, a bird's eye view, you get to be a little bit more creative? So tell me, you know, when you're not doing those 2 shows a week or the 3 shows a week, including the Spitballers and things like that, like, what are you focusing on during this time of the year?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of the latter thing that you mentioned, where you take the bird's eye view and you make decisions about the direction of the company. We kind of consider this our development cycle for the business. So this is the opportunity to, you know, the Ultimate Draft Kit's our biggest product. And so we spend a lot of time and effort planning out what features will be added to it or how we amplify it. It's a time to focus on the marketing strategy for the upcoming year. There is a degree of, you know, with the pullback of like quantity of content, where that's just, you know, a healthy thing for us. I mean, during the season, we're, you know, five shows, the Footcast, Sirius XM, Spitballers, normally something else pops up every week. So just from like a mental health, maintaining our excitement and passion for fantasy standpoint, it's pretty important to not be, at least for us, just to be grinding every moment of the off season on content. You know, when we launched, it was like we were the first like year round fantasy podcast committing to doing any content during this off season. A lot of the other shows were just taking the entire, you know, 3, 4, 5 months off. But most of it's what you had alluded to, where we want to look and see where opportunities are. We want to develop our products in the right way. And, you know, so that means the app and the draft kit and strategies that we have, you know, formally before last year, we also had our tours in the off season. So we were planning a lot of that type of things out. It's really cool to work in an industry where you do have a change of kind of the season nature of it, where you have a development cycle, where you get to build product, where the content is more, you know, it's a speculative, not reporting style of things. You know, all the content now is a lot of ground up content as opposed to just responding to what happened in fantasy. And then there is a little bit of reprieve and time with the family. And like the schedule is still like, we're all working full time, but like we do two shows a week, so we can record in the afternoons of the day before instead of coming in and doing them super early in the morning. So we do get more time to step away with the family. It's a nice season of transition right now.
Yeah, I hear you. This is my favorite time of the year. It's so labor intensive, the content during the season, that once you get to step back a little bit, it frees yourself a little bit, both, you know, mentally and physically. So what is more specifically, like, what is a day inside the Fantasy Footballers studio look like? Let's say you filmed on Tuesday, the show goes up Wednesday, and then you film on Thursday. So what is like that Wednesday look like? You guys all go into the studio, you know, you're working full time, so you go in for the full day. What is that? Is it like meetings? Is it, you know, what does that look like?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. We've been fortunate enough to add staff over the last couple of years that are, you know, working with us on developing content from, you know, recently we brought Kyle Borgagnoni on full time to work more of the editorial side. He's always been our editor in chief. He's always done a lot of writing for us, but we brought him in full time when we started amplifying the dynasty side of our business. You know, the website is always a focus. It always seems like there's a lot of opportunity there. And then we brought in a full time web developer. So we've been able to make progress a lot faster in some of our development areas. So we, you know, we come in after a day we're recording and we're probably prioritizing development agenda, you know, to start the day and meeting about specific things we want to get built out. Obviously this past week we had launched the Ultimate Draft Kit. So, you know, a lot of kind of up to launch focus was put on that. You know, we're meeting regularly with like we have our manager out in New York. So we meet with him about kind of progression on things like sponsorship deals, which, you know, I know you've been very transparent and talked about a lot on your videos too, about your year past and some of those discussions. So we're kind of right in February. It's a little bit interesting because you are like the appetite of like an advertiser or a sponsorship for football is like, just like the season's over and you know, you're not going to be kind of having the nitty gritty conversations, but you're kind of collecting your list and you're building kind of what the show is going to be like next year. And, you know, we have our segments and things like that. So yeah, it's just a mix and you know, we're still doing the Footcast and we're still doing Spitballers. So we're kind of recording 4 out of 5 days still, but it's more focused on the development right now.
Yeah. It's a good mixed bag. It's what keeps it fresh each and every day, which I think is what really ultimately makes the off season fun.
Well, and you do need a little bit of, you know, part of the goal of adding staff or resources is to have some level of margin of when you can sit back and say, okay, how do I make the brand and the product better today? And it's not just you know, wall to wall schedule, because you need to be able to sit there and like brainstorm for 5 minutes and say, wow, this isn't, you know, keeping up with the podcast industry for us, since the podcast is the core, is important too. Like being, you know, forward thinking about what the industry's doing and like where we need to take advantage of opportunities, as opposed to like the temptation is always to just like sit back completely and,
It's crazy established. Because like, you know, you said you guys were like the first kind of year round podcast, and now it feels like if you're not doing 3 to 5 shows a week, even in February when the season just ended a week ago,
right,
you're kind of falling behind. Like it's really crazy how that comes to kick you that way.
Yeah. And you mentioned like you kind of feel a sense of like, you got to get content out there, because stagnation would feel like, you know, going backwards, right? Like there's no neutral, right? There's either forwards or backwards. And so, but at the same time, being refreshed, having a passion for the product delivers a better product. And so it is a balancing act.
Yeah. I mean, like thinking of projecting, you know, I had talked about this in one of my videos when I go over projecting for the following year, looking at different sponsorships and things like that. We obviously couldn't have planned for anything that happened in 2020. It hit us quick and it definitely hit our industry. I think because we're based around content, and we did fortunately have the NFL season, things didn't go to plan per se, but it came out much. There were ebbs and flows throughout the offseason when I was like, okay, this NFL season is not going to happen. We got to like figure out what we're doing during the year. And then it ended up happening. And then there was times where I thought it wasn't, you know, things got really, really crazy in the beginning. Like you're a show, I feel like, that's built on the energy of being together, like your togetherness as, you know, Jason, Mike, Andy, the physical togetherness is something right. that I think is wildly underrated in our space, you know, whether it's podcasting or whether it's YouTube. There's a real, real energy behind being together for these things and having a natural connection between the people that you're doing the content with. And you guys had to, mistake me if I'm wrong, but do these Zoom calls for the first time ever, right?
Yeah. We had not done remote shows before until we had to.
Yeah, so for you guys who have built a foundation on like being together and being in the same studio and doing shows that way for so long and building up a successful, you know, brand that way, like how difficult was it for you to adjust to the new style of like Zoom thing? Because I know, you know, when we're doing content, even with my friends, we do like one show a week where we're together. As soon as we go on Zoom, there's just like this loss of energy. There's like a little key that's missing there, and you have to figure out how to replace it through another avenue, you know? So I'm curious, as for someone who's done it for so long, like what were the key adjustments that you had to make, and how difficult was it for you guys?
Yeah, it was super weird. I mean, we're over 1,000 shows together, and then here we are, you know, facing the quarantine and the lockdown, especially in the early months where we were remote recording. And it's a weird dynamic, especially, you know, like you said, I think it is underrated. I think that energy and that like being in the same room, like makes conversations and things flow in a certain way.
Because your guys' comedy is like it's very quick-witted. You work off each other really well. And if on Zoom, there's like a 0.3 second delay in the lag, it messes shit up and it's weird.
Yeah, I think it was a pretty quick adjustment, but those first few shows definitely felt awkward. I think they felt worse to us than maybe they even were.
100%.
Based on the feedback that we had, you know, received after, you know, we loved it. And I was like, well, that didn't sound like a good show, but, but yeah, it was a weird dynamic, but at the same time, you know, we were all in that survival phase to a degree. You know, you're just kind of doing what you need to do. You know, I think people that were looking for, you know, we're not curing diseases on this end of the microphone. We are offering you some sense of normalcy to your life. We are bringing you some comedy. We are bringing you some distraction, whatever like small 1% of 1% of your life that we can bring you during that trial period of this last year is what we were trying to do. So it was really important to us to be consistent on that front, try not to be very different in terms of what we're bringing to the table, and just, you know, you're just kind of surviving. You're like, okay, let's get to the next week and see what happens, because nobody knew what was going to happen.
Yeah. Is there anything that like really stood out to you during that time period, or, you know, just that entire off season in general, you know, maybe like a lesson learned or something you thought was going to work really well that didn't work well, or something that you didn't think was going to do well and all of a sudden kind of like blew up and you're like, wow, you know, this is something we can kind of build on. Didn't expect it to do well. Maybe something just from the period that you could like take forward with you. Obviously you guys are not going to do like Zoom calls for your shows going forward now that you don't have to.
Right.
But, you know, like what are some things you take away from that period?
Well, I mean, one thing that kind of came as a byproduct of that period of time is we built out home studios. I mean, we really didn't need it. We never had it. We didn't need it. We didn't do recording and live streaming from home. So we built out, you know, a corner in my master bedroom is now, you know, my home workstation studio. I can record there. I can live stream there. And
your wife's cool with that in the master bedroom?
You know what? Yeah, dude, she is. And she's awesome. But I look at it and I'm like, man, that is ugly. But
I mean, at this point, I'm sure you got a little bit of leverage there. Like you kind of needed the studio.
The leverage of like, hey, we're in the middle of a pandemic and I need to keep a job. So we're going to go put that in the corner.
She's but, like, check. Okay.
But she's like, all right with that. She got a puppy. Everything's fine. And but what we did do is we did commit to more like little live streams and stuff in association with like product stuff. And people responded really well to that. And we got it so turnkey where like, you know, sometimes it felt like such a burden to have those like impromptu live type of things, especially with the three of us and get the studio going and like cost benefits. So making it turnkey turned it into something where I was like, man, I really enjoy hopping on.
I was going to say probably the thing I took away from was the live streams as well. It became something that I didn't want to do at first, but as soon as I did, they became some of the most enjoyable pieces of like people just, they wanted to jump on and just like hang out for a while. It felt like a much more connected live stream than ones I've done in the past. It was people that didn't know what to do with their day. They had so much time, but didn't have anywhere to focus it on, right? Because everyone was working from home, and like you jumped on and they were like so happy to see you. I'm like, oh, this is cool for a change where no one's usually happy to see me on a regular basis, but they want to come and hang out and ask questions and just, you know, be normal again. I think that's probably the biggest takeaway is like you treat these people as if they're normal human beings, and it's crazy how excited they will be when you do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody is always engaged in, you know, they like the community aspect and the engagement aspect, but even more, we were all thirsty for that with stuck in your house and, and like, just the connection, like connection is the word, right? Like that is one of the five most important words of why we've had any success at all is connection with the audience. It's why podcasting is successful. It's why good brands are successful. It's why independent entities are successful. It's connection with the audience. So, there were some kind of, you know, I've had these conversations with my family too, where like, you know, you can sit there and you can dwell on all the things you're lacking or you're missing from the pandemic, but you can also find some, you know, nuggets of, you know, or some fruit in the midst of this, you know, kind of difficult time where, okay, we learned more about ourselves. We learned what's really important. You know, it sounds cliche, but there's a lot of things that you take for granted because they're part of your routine that you were kind of stripped down to the bare minimum and you learned from it. So I think our show, you know, we had some of those benefits with the live streams and the home studios and knowing that, you know, we could have one person at home and two people in the studio and still get the show done that way and like set up the infrastructure for that because we never had to before.
It just felt like a foundational year, you know? It was kind of like you had to throw the numbers out and the projections and like growth as a top line goal and just say, like, we're here for the audience. We're here to build a foundation. We're here to kind of like push ourselves and see, you know, when we are pushed to the limit, like how successful can we be? How much can we pull off, you know? And like going forward, that's huge because when you get into times that are difficult, you can always look back on this time and say like, oh, we did it then. We could be quiet and do it now, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And it almost, you know, when we first started, it used to be that mindset of like, can we buy the next month's worth of revenue? This year, you know, the mindset early on was like, hey, can we, you know, let's just make sure we're structured in a way where if there's no season, we're all right. We'll hit the ground running in 2021. We'll eat up some reserves or we'll cut our salaries or whatever we have to do. Let's just make sure we can get through this year no matter what comes and, you know, try to prepare ourselves and had prepared ourselves in a way to do that. So, you know, and we in the football industry, we got lucky. I mean, I know people that were in March Madness business and, you know,
we got as lucky as you possibly could be in the sports business.
We really did. We were super fortunate. The NFL wasn't, you know, they weren't going to be stopped unless, you know, somebody came in and, you know, stopped them. So it was fortunate timing wise. I think we were shocked and surprised by how many people were still engaged and, still involved and how successful of a year it really was in spite of all that happened. And we're just thankful.
Yeah, so I guess my next question was more business focused when it comes to what happened this year. And, you know, you mentioned you had the reserves, and I assume that you guys have been successful enough in the past few years that if something happened where, you know, the entire season was wiped out and your revenue levels dropped down to something you haven't seen before, you'd be okay. But in terms of, you know, like, when you're looking at these numbers, you still have to do some sort of projection, because you have to look at the following year, what you're going to invest in. Do you hire another person, or do you cut back now? Sure. Do you cut your salaries or things like that? So I'm curious, because I got a lot of questions like, hey, if I buy, you know, because at the time there's so much uncertainty. Hey, if I buy product X or product Y, the season doesn't happen, do I get a refund? And I just found myself being like, ah, fuck, like, I don't know. Like, we'll figure it out when we get there. You know, like, how in tune were you guys with actually trying to accurately, because it's a hard enough business trying to accurately project on a year-to-year basis, because the growth is so quick during certain times and it's super seasonal. So this year in particular, like, what was the mindset behind projecting for business, and like, how did you guys approach that?
Yeah, I think that we decided pretty early on that the best way forward for the business was to assume a season, from the sense of like our timing with the UDK launch, because, you know, that doesn't mean we weren't preparing. We ran runway estimations. We're figuring out all the adjustments we would make and what things we would have to do. But when we were looking at, you know, how do you approach selling the UDK, and how do you approach timing, and how do you approach features? Like, any moment in time there where we decide we're going to press pause on some of that stuff was going to be a tangible loss to the business if a season happened. And so it was a balancing act of those two dynamics, where it's like, okay, you need to know what you're going to do if this doesn't happen. But we didn't want to like sacrifice 4 months worth of development work just because, it was up in the air. We just didn't feel like that was a smart thing to do. So when it came to launching the UDK pre-sales, I think we were really fortunate in the fact that we proceeded as normal. Now, of course, that was a little bit before the pandemic. We normally launched that on Super Bowl Sunday, but we put so much effort into those pre-sales that we had a lot of front-loaded sales before any of the like uncertainty hit for people. So that was beneficial from a cash flow perspective. You know, we didn't have to, you know, you had like a month and a half before uncertainty started to hit the market, and uncertainty was a thing.
But couldn't that also end up being a problem? We don't have the season. Were you guys thinking about refunding the customers?
Oh yeah, we would have refunded all of it. Actually, what we did is we would have offered a refund to everybody.
Or next year.
Who requested it. But the default would have been, you're going to get we built the content, right? Like, the risk was more than just the money. The risk was, we're going to build all the content. We're going to put in all the effort. You're going to have the entire draft kit built to the brim. Like, on June 1st, that's when the draft kit launches. It's got all the content, all the videos, all the projections, all the everything. Might not have a season. So the kind of mindset was, look, here, you're going to get that for free, and then you're going to get next year. So you're going to get two draft kits for the price of one. If you stick around, if you want a refund, we'll give it to you. And that's kind of what we conveyed in our kind of like terms of buying it. And we might, you know, we wanted that out there, that like, if you buy this and there's no season, you know, you're going to get the benefit of having consumed it for 4 months. And then we figured that was enough goodwill probably for most people not to refund it.
Yeah.
But if they wanted a refund, we were going to respect that, because this is a time of year where people were, you know, money is tight. So.
Yeah. So that's the tough part, because, you know, this COVID thing could have, that doesn't only impact this year. Obviously, it kills your.
Kill next year too. Yeah,
it would have killed next year too, and like that makes things so difficult. I'm wondering like what percentage. That's probably something I would have done, and I would have been like super reluctant to have offered something like that. But I'm curious as to like, what do you think estimate wise? Like, what percentage of people probably would have taken you up on that offer? I would say almost anyone who's buying it ahead of time, probably for you guys, is like super loyal to you guys, and I would assume it probably would have been at like almost an 85 to 90 plus hit rate on that.
Yeah, I would have said, I would guess we would have had 5% or fewer refunds requests on all UDKs, because it's one thing, you know, you buy it and you're in it and you're using it instantaneously. So as long as we took care of those people in the right way, which would have been giving them access to next year, I think that we would have been around that 95%. That was our guesstimate. You know, that's kind of where we thought. And that's where it was like, okay, this year would be upside down. Next year would be weird, but we'd get through it, right? We would get through it.
On next year being weird, maybe the money will be fine. I'm really curious to see what happens with the industry as a whole, because obviously we had a drop off in consumership, especially your audience and my audience. Just the fact that we have a large portion of people really ramping up and getting into our content for the first time from, you know, August 15th through September 15th.
And those are, you know, you could say fly-by season-long players. And those are the people that are in leagues with their coworkers or college friends or family or whatever. Those are probably the least strong type of leagues. And those are probably the leagues that also didn't have leagues this year, right? Because if you're like, if you're kind of connected through the fantasy league and then people are like, ah, I don't know if I want to throw money into it and then try to figure it out as it goes, we might not have a season. A lot of those leagues dropped off. I'm curious to see, you know, if those leagues were kind of hanging on by a thread to begin with, do they even jump back into the game next year? You know, say we dropped off from a viewership of 100% the year before down to 60% this year or something like that. I'm curious to see what the delta in that 40% is. Like, if, you know, we're not going to get 40% of those people back, but is it 30? Is it 20? Is it only 10%? I'm curious to see the long-term effects of this whole thing on the industry, to be honest.
Yeah, that's kind of the discussion on how much pent-up demand there is for people to return, people returning to the stadiums, excitement for the game. One thing to remember from last year, or, you know, from 2020 as well, on top of the pandemic, is it was an election year. And when the election year happened 4 years ago, it was a down year for NFL ratings, and it was kind of a softer growth year for the fantasy football kind of space as well.
Interesting.
Just because of interest. So the league saw that hit during the election year as well. And so you had those things compounding this year. But at the same time, you kind of had some counterbalance in the fact that, you know, people didn't have anything to do. The TV demand, I think you remember when like the NBA was starting to come back and how insane it was that first week with them back on television, live sports. We hadn't seen live sports in forever. And fantasy is something that people can do from their couch if they're interested in it too. So we didn't feel a huge impact from the pandemic year in terms of listenership or viewership. I think the growth rate was capped by exactly what you're saying. But I do think 2021 is really primed to be kind of, whether it's, you know, I know we were talking a little bit about stock market and stuff, whether it's just the optimism in the world for the next year, I think is going to lead to a lot of good things.
I agree. I think we're going to bounce back stronger as a whole, just, you know, as a country and as internationally too, from everything. I think there's a lot of bad negative media out there, but at the end of the day, I think most people inherently do want the connection. I think most people inherently are good, and I think most people inherently will kind of go back to the norm that we had quicker than most people assume.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one thing too, like if you had to look at it, like what opportunity can we, like we're full time doing this, and a lot of people in this space aren't full time or they're part time, or we had the luxury of being able to work through that. And we're curious about what market share we grabbed, but don't know about, right? Because maybe we grabbed some, but then like you said, maybe there's 30% of people that didn't play in those leagues that they normally would have and consume content, but we were able to put out content during the year. Consistently, you were able to put out content consistently. So what market share did you grab from anybody else that wasn't able to do that wasn't able to put out content because the year was a different kind of year? So those are some questions that I think we, you know, anybody that's doing it full time is going to get to see in August.
Interesting.
September.
Yeah. So you're saying like what part of the audience that did watch? So a lot of the people that dropped off might have been your original audience members. So, you know, there was a hole left there. So maybe a lot of the viewership that kept you afloat was new members. And we're going to see almost like a double dipped spike coming into this year.
Yeah. For those that did play, when they looked for content, there might have been less content out there.
Got you.
Then years passed because of people didn't have the opportunity to put it out there in a year like this. So, you know, there may have been more market share, but you couldn't determine that because 30% of people didn't play. So maybe you'll get to see that bear out over the next year.
We've mentioned the UDK a few times, so congratulations again on another year of that dropping and the pre-orders going up, and I'm sure the numbers are doing well over there. I'm curious about something that you guys have been clearly very excited about throwing into the UDK for the first time this year, is that Dynasty Pass. Now we've talked about the year-long content machine that is fantasy football, and Dynasty fortunately has almost made that much easier for us because now we have demand for it to be year-long, whereas like, yes, you did, but it almost like didn't make sense to a lot of people. But we've been able to kind of funnel a lot of people into the Dynasty world. So What were your thoughts behind adding Dynasty into it? Was it like half because you guys play it and really enjoy it and you were like, okay, this is something that we'd enjoy adding into? Or was it you stepping back, looking at the landscape and just like Dynasty is almost, at least in our circle, like if you talk about fantasy football Twitter, I would almost say Dynasty is, if not more engaging than season long, like right there.
Yeah, I mean, we love Dynasty. Dynasty's engaging. It's fun. We play in keeper leagues. Anything that keeps your league and people talking all year long and where you can think about it all year long is super engaging and fun. Now, that doesn't mean it's the right thing to add to the draft kit or to the business just because we like it. I think we got to the point where we said enough people are playing Dynasty where, you know, all redraft content really fits a Dynasty person, right? Like they can benefit from it. You talk about a player, you talk about a player, but it's not necessarily in reverse. And a lot of people who play Dynasty want Dynasty content early. When we've launched the UDK, it's always been June 1st. You've got a little bit of early access to some rookie and Dynasty rankings, but pre-order meant like, you know, you pre-order and then you wait and then it launches. So what we had wanted to do is really just be able to create added value for our combo version of the product. And that meant three things. I mean, like the DFS pass was always part of it. Not everybody plays DFS. Not everybody plays in a state that can play DFS. Shout out to Arizona. We're like this close.
Shout
right
out
now.
To New York as well. We're probably not that close, but.
Oh my goodness. I thought we'd be like the last state in the country, but we've got a bill out there that I think is going to pass like this week. So
let's go.
Let's go.
Let's lose that money, baby.
Let's lose that money. But oh man, to be able to actually play, that'd be nice. But then like Dynasty is a whole nother segment. And then we wanted to add something else that was like a tool. So we're adding a draft analyzer as well. That's going to launch with the UDK Plus. That'll grade your draft, give you an evaluation of strengths, weaknesses, and things like that. So we just kind of wanted to maximize the value in that UDK Plus, and we rebranded that from just being the UDK and DFS combo. And so it's really neat to be able to offer something that is available instantaneously right now. So if you pre-order, you get the added benefit of like, I can log on, I can consume write-ups on the rookie classes and our rookie rankings and team opportunities and production profiles and like just dive right into it. So that made the most sense to us is like, it's always a timing thing. We've talked about doing that with Dynasty in the past. This was the year where we were like, okay, let's make that transition. Hopefully people respond well to it and give it a go. So that's where that kind of came from. And I think Dynasty is growing a lot, but you know, it's still a pretty small segment in terms of the big picture.
Yeah, but in the niches are the gold, man. I think people will respond really, really well to that for you guys. I mean, we did the same thing last year because we've had like the season long guide, but we did a rookie Dynasty guide specific for that last year, and it did pretty well, and I expect us to continue to grow on it. We actually pivoted off my main YouTube channel and started a completely Dynasty focused,
only. Yeah,
Dynasty only, and it's growing like really, really well right now in the off season. People absolutely love it because again, like when you find those niches and bear down on it, man, because people are thirsty for it.
No doubt. I mean, it's just kind of like, it's almost like the betting world where like, if you're knee deep in it, you're going to pay for resources and content that feed that, you know, year round passion. So like you said, with the niche side, you really engage the hardcore players.
This really feels like the, you know, I think we've had this conversation on these series before, but like talking about what's the next like breakout thing in fantasy, this feels like a new era of almost like a product that you can offer customers and really give value to an audience. It's season long, it's DFS. Dynasty feels like it is almost in its own category. And it's interesting because, you know, you said a lot of the season long content that you do does dictate things that would help you for Dynasty. But a lot of people, I think, will start transitioning to Dynasty content. I think unless you're actually playing Dynasty, like unless you're really in leagues, it's not as simple as just going like player for player and looking at analysis on players. There's so much more strategy to Dynasty. There are so many more pieces that you're looking at. I think it's something that you could tell very quickly, people doing the analysis on Dynasty, whether or not they really know what they're doing and whether or not they're actually playing in these Dynasty leagues. So I think that's another opportunity for people that really are in the niche of it to separate themselves, because there's a very clear line between people that do it and don't do it.
Yeah. And anything that you're really excited about, you want content made specifically for it. I mean, that's what you're pursuing and you're looking for. So makes
sense. So let me ask you, like, you adding this new piece to the UDK, the whole Dynasty side of things, this is something that I am, I don't know if I want to say like struggling with, but working on just the centralization of all the offerings that you have, because I find myself struggling to, you know, I hate like pitching my audience, but like we have a lot of stuff I want them to know about. You can only spend so much time throughout your shows being like, go here, go here, go here. You know, there's merchandise, there's Patreon, there's the draft guide, there's sponsorships that you got to plug in. And they're all, you know, it's been very difficult to find something that can bring them all together. And you guys have the same thing. Like, you have a lot of different offerings to find in a lot of different places. Have you guys, you know, sat down and said like, okay, let's find a software, let's find a membership plugin for WordPress that can do, e-products that can also do a membership thing that can, the way I'm thinking about it is like, I want to cut out as many like middlemen as possible. Like I don't want to be, I'm on Patreon, but I don't want to be on Patreon. Not because I necessarily want them to, I don't care about like the 5% that they're taking. If they're going to set up a whole ass platform and have it nicely organized for me, that's great. But like, it becomes crazy for the customers at some point, you know, like they don't even,
100%.
My friends don't even know where to, they're like, where can I get a sweatshirt? Like I've been trying to find it on here and here and here. I can't find it. Like you guys have these discussions often.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I mean, specifically to Patreon. I mean, it's almost a, it's a pure love hate with,
dude,
with
is there anyone
like
on Patreon that actually wants to be on Patreon? Like probably not, right?
No, probably not. And yet at the same time, it's like we owe so much to Patreon because of what they've represented to our business, especially from day one.
You hate
yeah,
to
we
see
thought,
it.
I heard you talk about centralization on, I don't remember, one of your videos. I heard you start to talk about it a week or two ago. And my reaction was like, okay, Nick, as normal, knows exactly what he's talking about and what's important. We struggle with it because it's not, if we started our business today, we would start it differently than it is structured now in terms of those pieces. We would like our customers to have the most seamless, not confusing, don't send our support staff an email because you don't know how to sync your Patreon to our website to buy a product. And why can't I just do this? And why can't, like, all of that sucks. And it should all 100% be fixed. And it should all 100% be centralized in a perfect world. However, as a business, you have to step back and you have to say, well, this sector, you know, these three spaces, UDK, Patreon, whatever, are they growing in their existing environment? What is the risk of making like a monumental transition and forcing people to transition from what they're routinely in into a new environment? And, is it worth us spending three developers like a year to develop the system that may make us less money? And, or be a net negative or a neutral. Like that's the balance that we always have as a company is it's like, we have plans and steps in place to do those things. And we've tried to make them easier and easier and better and better. And we've been able to centralize our products a little bit in the account and try to simplify that side. But I laughed because I just 100% relate to that mindset. I think the number one thing you should do as a company is try to make that easier. We don't want to pitch 50 things to anybody. And we certainly don't see any reason in like spinning up five other things to try to make money and then like robbing Peter to pay Paul because we got to chase an IDP thing over here to sell. And then all of a sudden, you know, you only have so much, what I say is marketing or like show capital to use. Like exactly. We're only going to talk about one thing when we talk about our thing. And if we have 10 things, we're still going to talk about one thing. So it's just, you know, we don't want to do that to our listenership. And if we could snap our fingers and rebuild it today, we wouldn't be on Patreon. We would have a singular membership. All the products would be folded underneath that. It would be a singular app. You know, there's a lot of things that we would do with that. And I think we'll get there. But we're going to try to do it in a way that's super measured and smart and, you know, doesn't undermine all of the goodwill of everybody that's committed and is in the system and is in the community and likes the routine of the community and like, that's what has to be, you know, thought through in a very, very careful way, or you just spin your wheels for no reason. You just spend a year paying money and development time to be net neutral, and that would be stupid.
Yeah, I'm laughing over here because like one of the things I sent you over that I wanted to talk about was just like pivoting in general, and where I see us differ a lot from you guys is I'm very like stop on a dime drastic. Let's start doing this shit over here. Let's do over here. And you're talking about, you know, being thoughtful and making sure you're not spinning your wheels. And like, I don't know. I just like, if I feel like something feels right, I try to do it. I also, of course, am not embedded to two other co-owners and people that I have on salary and all these other things that I have to think about. And you guys are obviously at a massive scale that making a pivot like that, just simply one of Patreon to a membership website would probably cut out 25% of your members just off the fact that they don't want to put their new credit card into the new site or something. So what we're working on right now is basically pivoting everything to just one WordPress website where yeah. We'll probably have to spend up for a bunch of different plugins that offer you the ability to have e-commerce products, merch products, all these different things that you can, what I want to do is have one very simple website. They go on, they can add everything to the cart straight from the homepage. Like, okay, I want a t-shirt. I want a membership website. I want the draft guide. Boom, 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 like that. Because I feel like there's so much like upsell opportunity in a sense. It's not even upsell like in a bad intention way, but just being on the website and just seeing it there, just the ease of use is there. So we're working very hard on that right now. And it's becoming like kind of what you said, like it's becoming a little bit messy because we're trying to do it within a time frame and have this set up quickly. But it's gotten almost over my head, and I have to work with an app developer. And this is one of the very few times in my life where we're doing something in my brand where I don't personally know how to actually do it, which makes me a little bit uncomfortable, I guess. You know, like I can't dive in and be like, okay, let me just spend the next 48 hours like brushing this up and doing this right and messing around with it, because I don't know how to do it. So any I guess like words of wisdom or advice for things that you don't know how to do that you let other people do, and I'm just like off the rails here.
I you know, it's been a transition as we've grown. I'm a pretty type A kind of guy, and I'm also really protective of our brand. You know, I want things to be that's the whole beauty of independence, right? Like we have control over our brand and what people consume. So I've had to go through that period of time of entrusting that to our team, to individuals on our team, you know, try to become more of the vision person than the execution person on a daily basis. Because I mean, when we started, we three did everything. I built the website. I kept the website up to date and sold every product. And, you know, Mike did every bit of audio and Jason helped with every bit of, you know, posting and article. I mean, it was every little bit of control was within our hands. You know, it's been different for me to transition into trusting the team, but I can say that every single step of the way, it's been better for the company when you find the right people to do that. So I guess the core message that I'm pulling from my own words is, do you have the right person doing it? Because that will assuage that doubt and fear or trepidation when you have a trust, right? That trust being built is the next step of the business growing. So having the right people, knowing that you have the right people, is probably so foundational to the next step of a business that it allows you and frees you up to be the vision person, to be able to speak into that, to trust. And, you know, we've got, I always say it, like our developer that we found, which was comedic because when we put the call out to find somebody, we said we needed to replace Andy with another Andy, and his name's Andy. So it happened on accident, but it's like when I come to him with feedback, it's always like one iteration away from perfection. It's like he does it, I give feedback, and then it ends up the right way. Like that is a beautiful thing inside of a business. If you find the right people, I think you get to where you want to go, and it calms you down.
Yeah, I think one thing I've noticed too is I've definitely had this backfire, but more often than not, when you give people the responsibility of doing something, they tend to come back with something that really surprises you. And people are a lot, for my sake, people are a lot smarter and more creative and more hardworking and just trustworthy than maybe I've given them credit for at the beginning. So there's probably a lot of leverage there. And it's just, you know, when you have so much going on, it's almost like this built up anxiety that you need everything to be perfect. So
yeah, if you have the conviction that something should be a certain way and it's not that way yet, then you might have to let go of the timeline a little bit too, you know, where it's like Dynasty came to the UDK at the right time. You know, there's certain products, the redo of the website, you know, we could do everything we want to do tomorrow if I hire 100 people. Do I want to hire 100 people? Do I want that business? You know, you talk about pivoting. We talk about certain levels of stability or headroom in our existing things. Both of those are great. What do you love doing? I mean, you're building your business. Do you love, if you love pivoting and running after the next, why not run your business that way? I mean, I think that that's the bigger message, right, of being an independent business.
Yeah, I think that it's pretty head on. You know, I'm trying to build up a sort of a lifestyle brand, and I guess it works in the fact that my life is kind of like that, and there's a lot of pivots and a lot of instability going on here. So it makes sense that it kind of pours over into the business. And, you know, just talking about like pivoting in a sense, you guys might not do it on a general business scale, but I am curious because I listened to the AMA that you guys recorded, I want to say like a month ago or so, and someone had asked you if you guys ever thought about doing other podcasts, what would they be focused on? And the answers from you three were unsurprising to me. You know, you had Mike and Jason, who are very into like the pop culture and the entertainment side of this stuff. So they said they would do something around there. And then your answer, again, no surprise to me, was something more around entrepreneurship. So have you ever actually seriously thought about doing some type of content that was specifically focused on that? If that's, you know, what you enjoy so much?
I thought about it a little bit. Yeah. I mean, I don't know in what form or shape that will take. I mean, it always feels, it's like these, doing these pods with you, or anytime I get to talk about stuff in the business realm, it's just engaging and fun to me. It's kind of the, you know,
just,
a little bit
I'm
of the
just going to throw this out here and feel free to say no, but listen, if you wanted to do a weekly pod, I would put all the work in. I would come up with the show sheet. I would do the editing and we could put it out there, man. I'm 100% down on that.
We can talk about it. It's something that's fun and it's engaging for sure. And it's like, I've always said I liked it more than fantasy. Like I like building the business more than fantasy football. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love fantasy football. So that's like the comparison there. But yeah, I mean, I've thought about that. I've thought about things down the line in terms of like, it'd be fun to write. You know, I grew up mm-hmm. always wanting to write, you know, so it'd be fun to write someday, or like, you know, take the experiences that we've gained from, you know, starting a business and try to share some things on that front. We all love what we do. It's always fun to do something. Spitballers is kind of that, where it's like, hey, we just get to like show up and I don't know what's on the dock, and I just turn the microphone on, then we talk about crap for an mm-hmm. hour and then we walk away from it. So anytime you're like knee deep in the content cycle that we're in, anything that's not where do I draft like Najee Harris is probably like a fun question sometimes.
Where though?
I'll let you know after the draft.
Hate to hear it. All right. So there is a sort of a random topic I wanted to talk about. And I guess it goes back to what we were talking about, how you guys are very homegrown. You're naturally built. And we've seen this very drastic shift over the last year or so, I'd say, of these, we'll say, quote unquote, dream teams in the fantasy space kind of putting themselves together, right? You've got Brad Evans and Fade the Noise. You've got, you know, Evan Silva and those guys over at ETR. You've got Fantasy Points with Scott Barrett and Graham Barfield in them. You know, and I kind of look at the space and I'm like, okay, those are the teams. Those are like the Lakers, the Miami Heats. They're putting it together. You guys and us, we're like the Oklahoma City Thunders. You know what I mean? We're homegrown. We've known each other. We build up from the rookie year and stuff like that. So I'm curious from not on a personal standpoint, because I know most of those guys too, and they're really, really cool guys. And most of them will probably end up being on this series, and I'll get their perspective on it. But from a business standpoint, because again, I do think there is something to building the foundation together, because it feels like the audience probably feels like they're in a family with you guys, like they're best friends with you guys. From a business standpoint, how do you see those things playing out? Because in the NBA, man, more often than not, those dream teams, I don't know if they're built up to the hype that they get when they come on board.
Yeah, I think, you know, like you said, Evan, Brad, incredible people, incredible humans. I'm so happy for them, because mm-hmm. one thing I do know from experience in this space is that there are a lot of people that work in fantasy that have had to grind and grind and grind with bigger brands, and they haven't gotten the tangible connection to their success that they deserve for mm-hmm. it. So when I see Brad doing his own thing, or I get to see, you know, Evan go and do his own thing, like it's almost like a about dang time you deserve to be in control of your destiny, and people are going to follow you and they're going to appreciate your content and what you have. I mean, in terms of there's room for it.
Yes.
You know, we never get threatened by it. We never get worried about it. We're more just happy for those individuals. It's like the competitive cooperation space that we're in. You know, it's like you and I, like we talk about the same stuff a lot of the time, but there's a place for the big dog listener, and a place for the baller listener, and a place for the Fade the Noise or the Establish the Run. To me, that's how we've viewed it. So I think those people and specifically are going to see a lot of success, and that there's room for it. But I agree that there's been a lot more and more of that. I think, you know, once you see one person do it, it's like, okay, we better do that too. You know, I'm sure not everyone's going to succeed at doing it, but it has been interesting to watch, because it used to be like, you know, it's the Roto World and it's the NBC and it's the, you know, the big, big players, and then the stars beneath there. But I think a lot of people are wanting a little bit more control over their day to day and a little bit more control over their income.
Yeah, and you got to respect that for sure. I guess I don't question it, but I'm very curious to see how it plays out over the long run, just like the longevity of not having the backstory of the brand. Because like when I think about branding is the story of who you guys are and like what you've built up to this point. And it's cool to, you know, mash together a bunch of these stars and these playmakers. And I think it can work for a season or two, but sometimes the storyline plays itself out. So I'm just very curious on that front to see, you know, how things kind of play themselves out in the space, because these are you mentioned like people that don't get the credit for putting the work in. And once you have the leverage of the audience, you know, these guys who are doing this, every time I saw a tweet out there, like Graham would be like, I have an announcement. I'm leaving, you know, Fantasy Guru. I'll let you guys know in 2 months. And I immediately was like, okay, I DM'd him. I was like, okay, the dream team, let's hear the roster. Cause you could just tell, you could see what's happening in the space.
They're pulling in more people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been crazy to see. And it's been fun to see. And I'm excited to like hear, you know, what the success of their season was and how they project going forward and things like that. It's fun to, it's fun to follow along. And
yeah, it's interesting for sure. Definitely have different thoughts about, you know, what could happen, but I'm excited for those individuals.
Yeah. You know, speaking of following along, I think the whole world kind of stopped and followed along to what was going on when we talk about stonks, man. And last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever the whole GameStop thing happened, that was probably the week, I would say, over the last 3 to 4 years where I got the least amount of work done. I was absolutely fixated on Robinhood. I was fixated on my screen, on Twitter, on Davy Day Trader. Like I was so obsessed with what was going on. It was so, so interesting. And then we saw a lot of people in the fantasy space on Twitter that, you know, were throwing out the money sign GMEs, and you're like, you know, gang, like let's talk about it a little bit, right? And it got really interesting to see who was kind of in the game. And I'm very, very new to investing in stocks. And the reason, just to like put a little context behind why I'm so interested in this, is as we've grown as a business, I'm still trying to figure out how to invest money back into it properly, because a lot of the money goes back to me personally and goes into my bank account. And I'm like, I don't really want that, but I also don't know how much of it to put back into the business and make sure I'm like, cause things are so fluctuating throughout the years, and like having the COVID, I didn't know where I should be putting the money, whatever. Case in point is like, I had a lot of extra cash laying around, and I'm like, I know just having that sitting in a bank account that's not, you know, increasing or whatever is just a very, very bad thing to have. Let me start looking into investing a little bit more. So, you know, we're looking at crypto, we're doing the Roth IRA, we're looking at, you know, day trading stocks and whatever. So I got into it probably at the most exciting time in the history of the stock market, like a month or two
stocks,
ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, shit has been crazy over the last 2 months. And I see you tweeting about it. So I'm like, okay, maybe Andy's like really in the game. Has investing always been something that you've been very, you know, tuned into, or is it something that because you started the business and maybe you had a lot of extra cash laying around, like you had, you know, kind of just dove in?
Yeah, I mean, it's something I've always been interested in, but it's grown over the years, I think, a little bit. I mean, that I'm still auto waking up at 4:30 in the morning on accident right now because of how freaking insane that whole Wall Street Bets period of time was, where it's like I'm getting up when pre-market is like hitting so I can, you know, make sure things are okay. And I'm refreshing the freaking crypto all the time.
Our editor, Scott, shout out to Scott. He tweeted out a couple of weeks ago. He was like, you know, the 9:30 market open is the new NFL red zone, like countdown, dude, on it. I was like, yeah,
dude, it's like that was insane. And it gets compounded too, because there was so much interest here in the studio. So it's like, there's like, you know, six of us that are like freaking OCD about it. I think it plays into the sport fantasy person's mindset. We like refreshing things. We like checking our phones every 2 seconds. Like it just plays into all of our, all the addictive personality of anybody that plays fantasy and, you know, joins of 10 million leagues. It was wild. It's been fun. I mean, I really like, you know, I like that. I like the game. I enjoy, like, we're big like Tesla supporters over here and stuff. So like that's, I think we really got more and more into the investing side when like you have a passion for a handful of brands or individuals or industries or, you know, autonomy and, you know, some of these ETFs you can get into about specific sectors you believe are growing, like renewable energy and batteries and things like that. So I think when that kind of world started to percolate like a couple of years ago, I think that's when we started getting more and more interested in it. It's fun. It was fun to be a part of the like every, like I could, I'd post about fantasy and I'd get like 37 Dogecoins replies. That's all I would get. or like GME replies. Like
that's when you know you're doing it right though.
Nobody wanted to talk about like, like fantasy players. They'd just be like, yeah, can I get the UDK and Dogecoin? And I'd be like,
but can they?
Not the UDK, but you can buy swag with Bitcoin.
Love, really?
I hooked that up. Yeah.
Love that.
But yeah, no, it's fun. It's kind of that whole, like, I wonder if people, because they've been stuck at home too, like this was just the right time for it.
Oh, 100. Dude, look at the entire stock market. It's like as soon as quarantine started, everything has shot up. So it's weird though, because I don't necessarily think it's going to go down, because the economy was kind of so shot that people got bored. They went onto the stocks. They started buying shit. They see how much hype is behind social media. But the economy is, I mean, I can't imagine it gets any worse. It's probably going to keep slowly going up over the next couple of years. So I'd imagine it'll do well. I just think there's a whole new influx of money in there. So I don't know if it'll go down.
Yeah, no, I agree. And then vaccine optimism and you know, you get to the end of the pandemic. But that's also all of history. Like the stock market's always gone up for always.
Yeah.
And you look at every president that's ever been in office, and like there's like three where like it ended worse than it began, and the rest of them, it's always gone up. So the real way to invest for like your mental health is to like find, you know, exchange traded funds or like smart investments, and then like don't check your Robinhood every morning, noon and night, and then just like wake up, you know, like 6 months from now. And yeah, it's not possible. It's way less fun. The fun way to invest is to like go day trade or go try to find go live the FOMO life. And then
do you day trade more, or do you treat it more like your business, where you look at things very, you know, strategically and actually, you know, intelligently, you know, you throw into what you believe? Because I very much relate to what you said with like Tesla. One of the reasons I got into investing is like I'm a huge fan of Barstool and obviously Penn buying them. And sure, I think their business model is just flawless. And I think they're going to continue to go up and up and up and up and up and eventually, quote unquote, take over the world. So Penn was a stock that I heavily invested into. It's one that I believe in. So most of the time I'm putting money.
Yeah, that worked out well.
Yeah, most of the time I'm putting money into the companies like you did with Tesla that I personally believe in and I personally think will go up, not because someone on Twitter told me to do so.
The last thing you want to do is lose money on a company you don't believe in, right? If you don't like the way that the company is going, but somebody tells you to go invest in it, and then you lose money on it, that is like the worst feeling you could possibly have. Like that's been the dance Apple stock for me. Like I use Apple. I have all Apple products. I really don't love Apple, but I'll like invest in Apple and then I'll be like, why do I have Apple? Because I don't really want to believe in some amazing future for Apple. So I've learned to invest in stocks that you love, that you want to see succeed. I'd rather lose money doing that. And I would say I'm about 70-30 on the like being smart and then day trading and covered calls and things like that on the other 30%. But I do work. I don't want to ever use my Twitter platform to like run somebody into the ground on like FOMO hype either. So it was fun being a part of the like groundswell of individuals. I think there's a level of like retail investors, control of your own money. No one tell me what to do. That's why crypto is so successful in its, you know, structure, is because it's like you have control over it. It's me and you, and we make a transaction, and the banks aren't there, and the regulators aren't there, and the stock market's not there, and Wall Street's not there. So
it's about the community again, I think, too. This one to like an exponential, you know, you just want to feel like you're a part of something. And then once you get it, even if you didn't know, like, bro, no one thinks that GameStop stock is worth $300 a price, but buying at like 260, you're like, you know, you're in with everybody else. You're like, let's go. You're like, I'm a man of the people. And it is, you know, saying what you're saying with buying a stock that you don't believe in, it's like fantasy. It's like for people that I convinced to buy Miles Sanders this year, they didn't want him to begin with, but they took my words, they bought him, and then those are the people that are extra mad at me now. So don't take...
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Lose take the Twitter guy that advice. You believe in. Yeah, don't take Twitter advice for people telling you to do stocks. Don't take fantasy advice from me.
No, and if you're just hearing about it on Twitter or on TikTok, then you weren't there quick enough. You know what I mean? It's like the people that make money were not, they didn't run to TikTok to tell you about it. They were in there like 6 months before you heard the TikTok. So
yeah, and that's actually a good point. It's almost like creating content. I tell people this a lot, younger kids. I'm like, if you want to be where Andy is, you can't do what Andy did to get there, right? Like you're not going to be able to build up a podcast from scratch right now to the number of downloads that they get, because that market, people have already seen you do that. So they've been trying to copy it for a long time. You always have to be looking at the next best thing. That's the same thing with stocks, I guess. Are you investing in other things besides stocks? Because we've seen fantasy Twitter, go anything that you can make a quick penny on, like, you know,
like NBA Top Shot, or
it's sports,
or like,
cards, it's Top Shots, it's, and you know, nothing, and digital art, nothing against those people at all, but the way I look at it is like, okay, people make money in real estate, right? Real estate is a great investment. It doesn't mean that you need to be on top of it. You don't need to be trying to make money all the time. I would say, like, a smart piece of advice was, whatever you're investing in, again, make sure that it's something that's personal to you, something that you enjoy. Like, I tried getting into the sports cards craze. Like, I was nuts about sports cards when I was 10, 11, 12. And I got into it a little bit this year. You know, I was able to get boxes and do a couple box breaks on my channel. But I realized really quickly, like, you know, I'm not as passionate about it. I don't have the time to invest and really watch the market on these things. So I kind of pivoted away. And that was something I probably could have made a lot of money if I put a little bit more effort into it. I was like, I'm not really about it, though. Are there any things that, like, kind of pop off to you that you maybe do invest in or could see yourself investing in over the long term?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the two main ones are just the market and then the crypto universe. Like, I really do believe in Bitcoin and Ethereum and, like, the structurally sound long-term type of, you know, you just saw Tesla invest $1.5 billion of their cash into Bitcoin. So I think more companies may follow that. And that's that's an interesting space that I really like, because it's the technology side of it too. You know, my son and I, we went out and spent money on first edition Pokemon card packs, you know, and opened them together. And we did. Yeah. I had a couple, I got a couple packs of like the OG Fossil and Jungle packs. And we did had to pay, you know, like $1,000 a pack, and we opened them together and got the hollows out of them and sent them in to get graded by PSA.
Did your
and
that son was like even know what Pokemon was, or did he, was he just like involved in the
whole
in
reason
the
I did it was because my son is obsessed with Pokemon. So it was like, hey, I could do this. Maybe we make some money, maybe we don't. But either way, like, I've got this awesome memory with my 9-year-old of opening these two packs that are legendary to him that, you know, I was buying when I was in seventh grade, and they were 50 cents a pack or whatever.
Dude, I can't believe you didn't do like a box opening video on that. Like,
I really should have. Yeah, I should have. But at the same time, it was like, it wasn't even about that. It was just like, this is something when he finds out this pack shows up, he's going to freak out, and it'll be fun. And maybe we'll make money. Maybe we won't. I tried to get back into the sports cards too. Like, I was just like you, like, my whole life was sports cards growing up. Like, I loved it. Like, especially NBA cards. Like, that was my favorite thing. Opening packs, collecting them, going to card auctions. But I couldn't find myself, like, you can only do so many things in the day, man.
Yeah.
It's like, I couldn't find my, like, I was doing it just enough to where I couldn't dive in. And I if you can't dive in and be fully into it, it's like, I wasn't going to make money. I wasn't going to really enjoy it.
It's also with our work, like, we follow football so intensely. I don't, you know, when I was younger, I loved baseball. I loved following basketball, but, like, I don't have time to follow those. And those are the markets you really need to be in. And you need to be, you know, you need to know, like, the backup point guard and whether or not his card went from 6 cents to 7 cents or 6 cents to 4 cents today. I'm just like, dude,
you gotta be on the Gary V level. The Gary V level of knowledge, Adam Lefko.
Yeah, just out of control levels of energy for these sports cards. That I just, like, they're just not there for me. But I found myself, it was nuts, man, because I was, you know, Pokemon was there when we were younger, like, right in my prime of collecting those kind of things. And when the craze of this stuff started happening, I was literally on YouTube for, like, hours watching people open up the first edition Pokemon cards.
It's exciting. It's fun. Like, I told my parents, I'm like, if they didn't throw my Pokemon cards out, I probably don't even have a podcast, because I'm probably the richest man alive. I had so many freaking cards that they threw away.
Ridiculous,
but,
bro.
But it is funny. And it is, you kind of get sucked into any of it. Like, it's the community, right? You talked about, like, that Pokemon box breaking. My son's watching them all day long. I'm like, oh, this is actually really exciting. That guy is really excited to get that card.
Yeah, dude, it's so much fun, especially when you get the nostalgic piece of it, because we're like, you know, like the OGs, like, we know what are, man. You know what I mean? It's not about money for us.
I was at the Toys R Us when that thing came out.
Yeah, it's crazy, man, it's crazy. So, you know, speaking of, like, just different things that you invest in because you believe in them, you mentioned Elon, and I did see you just tweet out about something about, like, Starlink, and I don't even know what that is, but I'm assuming that's just, like, you kind of just believe in most of the Elon products that he puts out nowadays.
Right,
You know, you're kind of just a fanboy over there. Are there other companies, businesses, brands, personal brands, creators, entrepreneurs, whatever, that you personally just, like, look up to, admire, you think that they do a great job in business overall? Because, like, I mentioned Barstool. I think they're great with media. Like, I've looked up to, and I aspire to be. What you guys are doing over there is, I think, incredible and paving a way for the fantasy business. Are there people that you know look up to? Are there people that kind of paved the way for you from a business mindset?
I have a lot of respect for David Kim and the people at Fantasy Pros and what he's built. And I know that there's like a lot of like in the fantasy community, they get a lot of grief and there are people that don't like some of the things that they've done with the rankings. And
I'm with you. I'm a huge fan of what they've built too.
But I know Dave, and he's a shrewd, smart business guy. I think he's a good dude. I think he takes care of his employees. And I think he's just really, I just think what they do, like, I always know that they're going to be on top of things. And so I think from, you know, just the sidelines, I have a lot of respect for what they do and the things that they put their time and effort into. Regardless of other people's opinions, I have a lot of respect for him. So, you know, that they were definitely one of the companies that you can look at and have a great deal of just respect for how they run it. I think, you know, I've always said like Dan Patrick and what they do, like that was always a big inspiration for us, and like his show and their vibe and their feeling and the brand that they had was something that I think early on we respected. So those are kind of the ones that jump out to me. You know, you mentioned Elon and his whole universe. That's just been fun to watch because I like seeing innovation. Anybody that's doing innovative things, anybody that's thinking differently about, you know, tomorrow than the Wall Street estimates, you know, following some algorithm, think about tomorrow and exponential growth and industries, like that stuff's fun. I mean, I think that's engaging content.
Have you ever thought about, when I think of those guys, like I love, you know, the Elon Musk and the Jeff Bezos of the world. And I think the reason I have like an inherent love or respect for what they do is because it goes back to my problem of I guess delegating in a sense. I have such a tough time being like, oh, you can do this and I trust you to do it, even though like I feel like I could do it best. When you look at them, have you ever thought about what it would be like to actually run a business that was, and you guys are obviously scaling and you have a number of full-time employees, but like, do you think you'd be able to run a business that was, you know, 100 people, 500 people, 1,000 people? Like, that's so overwhelming, but like people do it and they do it successfully. It's wild.
I know. It's Mark Cuban comes to mind too. Like all the stuff that he runs and the fact he can like speak into all these areas with such knowledge. Like my answer is no, I'd probably never be able to do that. Like these are just unbelievable individuals. But at the same time, like when you read about, you know, Elon and you read about the beginning of Tesla and you read about the journey, like it looks great now, like, but it wasn't always great. You know, he had to learn how to talk to people like a human being and not alienate every single person of his staff. Like there are growing pains for all of these individuals. You see them on the top of the mountain now, but maybe I'd feel different in 5 years or 10 years, or, you know, I didn't think I'd be running a business without any full-time employees when this thing began. So again, it's, are you structured in a way where you have great people around you? If you have great people around you, you can do a lot.
Yeah.
When you can trust individuals and our team, you know, it's like, I just spend half my day being thankful for them. That's about it.
It's almost like, you know, when creators are starting out, I think they overwhelm themselves with looking at people like you who have such large followings in the space. And they're like, oh, I don't know if I could ever do what they did. I'll never get to that point. But I guess is that like journey along the way that you learn the things that you need to learn in order to perform at that level? You know, like you guys put on the show, whatever, five times a week. And it's not like you're stepping in there like, oh my God, we're about to perform in front of 200,000 people. It's a normal thing for you at that point. But at the beginning, it's not. So I look at it too. I'm like, okay, running 100, 250 person company, I'm like, there's no chance in hell I'd be able to do that successfully. I don't know. Maybe if you're in that spot, you really could.
Yeah, because it's one foot in front of the other, right? I mean, yeah. I think it's like you said, it would be really intimidating to think of, can I handle these 57 things? And I think it's Jordan Peterson that said, you know, like if you're feeling really overwhelmed, like set lower goals, like set yourself a few goals that you can get to and then like pat yourself on the back and check the box and go to the next one. You know, it's not 0 to 100 miles an hour on day one.
Yeah, I think that's a good mindset to have. And for people just starting off in the industry, of course, you want to set your goals high, but understand that you'll be just as excited for the little, you know, check marks along the way as some of the bigger creators here that hit bigger check marks that look like they're on a pedestal to you. But, you know, you get that 5 subscribers, you get that 50 subscribers, you get that 100 subscribers along the way. Those will feel just as good as a lot of the milestones that the bigger creators hit along the way as well. And I want to say that about wraps up most of the questions or things that I had on the sheet for you today. Unless there's, I guess, you know, we did have the news this morning of Roto World kind of being overtaken by NBC Sports Edge. I want to say the word is. No questions. I think they're keeping all the staff and it's all the same thing. They're just like rebranding it. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Not really. I mean, I saw Evan tweet the like peace sign and like I went and checked it out, and now it's blue instead of red, and it's got a different logo. But you know, they've been owned since I think 06 by NBC, and they just, I don't know. When I first heard the news, I thought they were gone. And I was like, burning money. Seems really stupid.
Yeah. It feels like they just don't, I don't know. Like
I don't know what they have.
Like, I just don't think they, you know, maybe we think they have more than they do, and they probably know better than we do. But like from where we sit, it feels like these guys are, you know, if nothing else, just like monumental pieces of this industry, and will continue to grow in an industry that is in itself growing exponentially. Like, it feels like NBC doesn't really see any ceiling for where the fantasy space is going, letting the guys like Evan Silva walk and changing the name as if the Roto World brand doesn't mean anything, which is so far from the truth.
No, it seems super stupid. Yeah. I mean, it's like it's a part of a larger property, and they don't have a concept of what it's represented or what its potential value is. And I think it was heading that way a long time before the banner changed colors. You know, it was like the writing was on the wall, letting great people leave. And yeah, it's unfortunate, you know, because they could have done a lot with it, still could. But I mean, it began last year. You couldn't even get the Roto World app anymore. Like, it's deleting the brand. Yeah. And like, you had to get the NBC News app. And there was I can't remember a bathroom trip I haven't refreshed that old Roto World app until they deleted it. So
that was devastating. Definitely, I hated that. Yeah.
Definitely sucked.
Yeah. All right. Well,
yeah, that was interesting news.
Yeah. I just figured I'd throw it up on here. So that's all we got, unless there are any other pressing topics or questions or comments, concerns. From your side over there?
Always concerned about you, Nick. Always concerned.
But, likewise. I'm more concerned about you. I'm concerned about that hat. I'm concerned about the valley. The whole valley thing.
The valley of the sun is doing well. We got it on lockdown over here. You just take care. Someday we'll get to travel back, or travel, I guess, anywhere. So that would be cool. And maybe we'll come back there, and there'll be another conference or two, or
the live shows,
we can have a White Russian in together. So someday
I would love nothing more. So thank you guys out there for listening, for watching. If you're on YouTube, of course, make sure you're following Andy, all of his links, Twitter, Instagram, their YouTube channel, their podcast and stuff will be linked in the description down below. If you enjoyed our talk, make sure you hit the button that looks like this. Subscribe to the channel. If you're new, we're going to be doing one of these talks each week, bringing on a new person to fill Andy's shoes, and hopefully bring on a different hat over there. But again, thank you, Andy, for joining us. It was a pleasure as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
Take care, man.
Let's
How you doing?
Hey, I'm asking the questions here.